When you game with Alienware, you have the freedom to be anyone, whether it's a smooth-sounding narrator or the galaxy's most feared warrior, and the freedom to go anywhere in nearly an instant. So no matter who you choose to be or where you choose to go, Alienware empowers you to defy boundaries and find freedom. Elevate your gameplay with the new Alienware X-Series laptops with 11th-gen Intel Core processors. Defy boundaries and start gaming now at Alienware.com.
Hey, everybody.
This is Kim.
And this is Cal. You're listening to Shiny Things.
I love Shiny Things.
Me too. We've seen a lot of them today.
Yeah. We do tend to get sidetracked more often when we haven't been together for a while.
We don't really have a lot of business, right? Other than...
Well, we do about our... not really retiring.
Oh, we're going to Disney our shit.
Yeah. We're putting it into the vault, people. Not all of it. Just some of it. And we're not really sure which episodes it's going to be eeny, meeny, miny, mo. So we can't tell you which ones we're putting in the vault and for how long. But if you have any interest in listening to any that you haven't listened to, or you've listened to them and you love them so much you want to listen to them again, do it now, because within the next week or two, they're going away.
We cannot put the Mad Gasser away.
I know, that's one of your favorites. I'm not really sure which ones I want to put away yet. That's why I figured we could do a eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
That works.
So, Callie, today, did you ever hear of a little girl named Polly Class?
I have not.
So, back in October of 93, well, let's start from the beginning.
Yes.
So, it was October 1993 in a town called Penaluma, California, where 12-year-old Polly and her 6-year-old stepsister Annie lived with their mom, Eve. So, Polly really, really, really wanted to have a slumber party and invite a couple friends over. And after she finally got the green light from her mom, she did just that. She invited her friends Jillian and Kate. So they planned this somber party for a Friday night. It was actually October 1st. And, of course, as any young girl would, they had great big plans for the night. Just like any other preteen slumber party.
Of course.
They'd planned on partaking in a night of fun and laughs and ice cream and board games and dress up. And if I was there, it'd definitely be chocolate too.
Oh, we should have gotten you some chocolate when we broke for lunch.
No, because I'm trying to cut back, remember?
Sorry.
So the first person to arrive was Jillian, who arrived at around 7 o'clock at night. And after getting permission from Eve, Polly and Kate walked to the local store to buy some popsicles, which was kind of an odd thing for October, but whatever.
Well, it's California. It's probably warm still.
Oh, that's right. I'm forgetting. I'm sitting here in a sweatshirt, and yeah, you're right. So they came back and waited for Kate, who arrived around 8:30. And now it was time for the fun to begin, but it didn't. That night ended in tragedy when a man entered the class home around 10 p.m. with a butcher knife and entered Polly's bedroom. On his person was a bag containing the items he would use to tie them up. And Eve didn't hear their screams because prior to all this taking place, she had taken sleeping pills because she had a migraine and because she knew the girls were going to be really, really loud. And she knew if she didn't, she wasn't going to get any sleep.
Yikes.
Yeah. So around 11:30, she was woke up by Jillian and Kate, who told her a mother's worst nightmare. The police were called, and Jillian and Kate explained to them what happened that night, recalling all the painful details step by step leading up to Polly's abduction. So the girl started off by saying that a man had come through the door and he told them to stop screaming or he'd cut their throats. And of course, they stopped their screaming. He asked who lived in the house, and Polly spoke up and said that she did, but she begged him not to hurt them or her mom and little sister, who were in the house as well. The man had said he wasn't there to hurt them. He was just there to rob them. So at that point, the girl said Polly told the man there was some money in a jewelry box. I don't know where it was, but there was money in a jewelry box.
Okay.
So the man then told the girls to lay down and proceeded to tie their hands behind their backs with a strap of cloth and cords from a video game, along with one of those pocketbook straps.
Oh, like the
little purse?
Like the leather?
Yeah, so he cut that off the purse. He just tied him up with things that he had found around the room.
Well, he didn't seem like he was all that good at planning.
He also took pillowcases from the room and put them over the girls' heads. Then at this point, he told Jillian and Kate to count to 1,000 and he'd be back with Polly before they ended their countdown. He just wanted to look for the expensive things in the house and then they'd be back. Well, Polly never came back and neither did the man. They had no idea something so horribly and unthinkable could happen, but it did. At this point, Kate said she thought it was some sort of practical joke, like since it was so close to Halloween. Mm-hmm. But then she realized, as she was gagged, that it wasn't a joke at all. So upon entry to the bedroom, the police noticed it was in a shambles. Certainly, it did tell of the events that happened just minutes before. There were strips of cloth laying on the floor, along with pillowcases, cut cords from a Nintendo game, and like I said, the purse straps. It was obvious it wasn't a robbery. There was no evidence left behind to say that it was. And the abductor, the police thought, after their initial thought, that it wasn't really premeditated at all. It was just something that probably just popped into his head that he was just going to do this horrible thing.
Yeah, especially because he didn't have ropes and that kind of stuff. Right, he wasn't
really. But we'll get to that. He'll actually explain it later on.
Oh, okay.
So when the FBI arrived on the scene, it was a whole other story. They searched the room using electrostatic dust print machine. I'm not really sure what the technical name is for it, but
it puts dust in the air.
So what? Well, here's what it does. It collects the tiny hairs and fibers off the floor with like a positive charge when it's passed over it with a sheet of Mylar. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Also known as Bopet. So any loose debris clings to it, and then it's sent to the lab for an inspection. And even though the police had already dusted for fingerprints, they didn't have the advanced equipment that the FBI used, along with their fluorescent powder that, when combined with a distinct ultraviolet light and amber-colored goggles, illuminated things that otherwise would remain hidden. So they were way more high-tech than the police.
Right, and this was 93, you said, right?
Correct. They also found a partial palm print on the headboard of the bed where he must have leaned forward to possibly grab at a pillowcase.
Oh, okay.
So whatever he did, he left the palm print behind, unbeknownst to him or the police prior to the FBI. Now, they needed someone to match it to, which was the hard part, because if you don't already have a record, there's really nothing that you're going to, you know, tie you to it.
CODIS or anything like that.
Right. So they began their search by checking into possible family members or someone that Polly may know. So the first person they looked at was Polly's dad, Mark, but he didn't live in the home at the time. He was immediately cleared. Mark immediately took a leave of absence from work to help search for his daughter and ultimately became a big factor in changing the outcome of a lot of cases after Polly's. And I'll get into that too. Investigators began to realize that this was a stranger abduction, which would mean it would be a lot harder to solve. fibers used, you know, like the cloth seats in a vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
They also found some of them at the crime scene. So all of Polly's family member vehicles were tested because she could have been sitting in the car and just brought them in
right.
at that point, which would explain those fibers. However, they were all eliminated, meaning there were no fibers even remotely like that of their car. So it most likely was the abductor's car. There was also dark brown hair found in Polly's room on the rug that still had a root in it, like it was yanked out of somebody's Ooh. Head, leading them to believe that it belonged to the abductor. They had all this evidence and yet didn't know where to even begin to start looking, since it was a stranger abduction with no real starting point. So by dawn, more than 100 agents and officers had begun the search for Polly and her abductor. Over the next 2 months, about 4,000 people volunteered to help in the search for Polly. It was like this thing went all over the place, and I'm going to tell you how that happened. In the meantime, they used helicopters and canines. They searched on foot. They searched anywhere and everywhere, but found no sign of Polly. People all over the world knew about Polly's case right from the beginning, because normally when media gets a hold of a case, it's spread through the local newspapers. But because the internet was up and coming at the time, the story went worldwide because of two local residents who basically went to the police and said, if you put Polly's missing persons poster online and digitalize it, a lot more people will see her picture and the sketch of the abductor. So it'd be faster spread and more people will be aware of Polly's disappearance.
That's a good idea.
So for the first time, that's what happened with the help of a computer columnist. And in no time, they were actually able to send the poster out to more than 20 million users. So if the abductor took Polly to a different state or country, more people would be aware of it that much faster. Now, I think I skipped over the part where, because I said they put up a sketch of the abductor. Mm-hmm. The girls had been taken in when they were explaining what happened, and they gave a description, and that's how they were able to come up with that.
Okay.
Yeah,
because he didn't put the pillowcases on their heads immediately.
No. So,
Okay.
Since this case, there's been so many different resources created online. For instance, like the Charlie Project. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
So you can see all kinds of missing persons posters on this whenever you want. And for the first big break, it actually happened in abductors in a crime in general. So it was where you could... where missing persons were up there, and it'd be like one specific area that you could see all these missing people and their information. So it was like a starting point for all the country. And so they put it up there as well, and they put the caption, "Have you seen us?" So they had Polly's picture next to the abductor's sketch. So if you see Polly or you see the abductor, either way, you know, you're going to get some answers. They also sent it out to supermarkets and truck stops all over the country so they could post it on their bulletin board. Sort of like Walmart when you go in there, or Sam's Club. They have the missing children and everything. And I always take the time to look at that board because you never know.
Get stylish, durable flooring for your home that will last a lifetime. And get it installed with help from Lowe's. Get Stainmaster Pet Protect Carpet starting at just $1.99 per square foot. And Pergo Wet Protect Laminate starting at $2.49 per square foot. Both with limited lifetime warranties. Order now, only at Lowe's. Home to any budget, home to any possibility. Install available in-store only and through independent contractors. See Lowe's.com for details and licensing. U.S. only. See Lowe's.com product detail page for more warranty information.
Right.
So, in addition to all that, flyers were sent out to 54 million homes. That's crazy.
That is a lot. Could you imagine how much that would cost today?
A lot. So these posters said that Polly was 4'10", weighed 80 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. The case even reached Hollywood, where Winona Ryder offered $200,000 reward for the whereabouts of Polly. I think she felt close to it because she actually grew up in Petaluma.
Oh, okay.
And the case was also featured on America's Most Wanted and 2020.
Wow.
They'd spoken to teachers and students at Polly's school. Nothing. 2 days after Polly's abduction, her dad answered the phone call, which was seemingly Polly on the other end, saying that she was in a hotel room and that her abductor had just left, and that's why she was able to make the call. But then the line went dead. And since they hadn't,
the tracing?
Yes. So they didn't do that on the father's phone because they really weren't expecting something like that. They weren't able to find out where the call was coming from.
Ugh.
But anticipation of yet another call, they went ahead and they put a tracer on the phone. So if it happened again, they'd be able to get some information.
Isn't that like the first thing they typically do is tag the phone?
I thought so, but maybe they didn't think that they would call the dad because the dad wasn't really a big part of the family. I mean, he was a part of the family, of course,
right,
but he wasn't in the family home at the time.
It's true.
So you'd think that the phone, if there was going to be a call made, it would have been directly to the mother.
It's true.
So eventually, the FBI came across a witness, a little boy named Thomas. And he told them that he and his friend had gone to a video store around 9 p.m. that night that Polly disappeared. And he had seen a man outside the class residence.
Hmm.
And like everybody else in the neighborhood, he knew everyone, but he didn't recognize this man.
Hmm.
But when they walked back past the class home on their way back from the video store, he was still there. He said that the man was between 32 and 35, which is...
For a little kid?
Yeah.
And
how old was this little kid? I mean, it was 9 o'clock at night and he was walking around by himself, but anyway. And he said that the man was between 5'10 and 6'3 with thick, wavy, salt and pepper hair and a full beard with age lines on his forehead and around his eyes. So he had been pretty damn close.
Well, hold on. Like 5'10" and 6'3".
And don't forget the age lines in his forehead. So, I mean, how close was this kid?
Right, and that's a big. I'm sorry, but that height is that's a big difference in height. Unless he was sitting.
Well, it's what 5 inches. It's not a lot. 5 inches.
I know. If you stand somebody that's 5'10" next to somebody that's 6'3".
Well, I guess. But I was more impressed that he actually saw that he had a thick beard and
the beard should be
out. Age lines on his forehead. I mean, from far away, how far away were you? I mean, remind me, don't frown. So like I said, I'm not sure how old this boy was, but I have to give him props for remembering that much detail. The next witness story would be the most disturbing to me. When interviewed, there was a neighbor behind the class residence that said they looked out their window and saw a man by the back door of the class home, and he looked like he was going to go in, but he didn't. They went on to say they'd never seen this man before and thought it was super strange for him to be hanging around outside the class home, but they didn't want to get involved. And that's why they didn't call the class. They could have at least called the Eve, the mom, and told them this. And they didn't call the police. How fucking stupid are you?
You see something, you say something. You don't have to get involved. You can just say,
hey.
You
don't want to get involved, but there's somebody outside your single mother's home?
Well, my thing is, it's like, just call them. You're not getting involved just by placing a call.
I would have been like, what the fuck are you doing out there?
Yeah, who are you?
Standing around. Who are you? Get the fuck out of here.
Right. I don't know, but
that's
we're
just me.
We're
I'm
jerks.
Getting wound up.
jerk slash, you know, caring neighbors.
I just feel like sometimes people are real pussies.
They are.
You're afraid. Get over yourself. Anyway, I'm getting wound up, so let me get back to this.
Okay.
So Polly's father received a second call, and once again, the person on the other line said it was Polly. But like I said, the investigators were prepared this time. So they traced the call immediately to a residence only 14 miles away, headed there, and entered the home like
they kicked down the door, yeah,
getting in that house. And there was a family there that was completely confused, like, what in the hell is going on here?
Like, in the middle of dinner.
Yeah, like...
And their door just pops off.
They're doing their charades, and so police bust through the door. Anyway. Just remember, we have a soft spot, but we also have a sixth sense of humor.
Yes.
And it's not that we're trying to be disrespectful or anything.
No, because here... Well, I mean, that family... Like, if somebody kicked down my door in the middle of dinner...
Get the fuck out of here!
I was like, what the fuck you think you're doing? You're gonna pay for that.
Yeah. So, a teenage girl at this residence ended up confessing that she had been the one calling as Polly. After a dare by her friends. You little bitch.
Oh, I hope they kicked down her bedroom door.
I'll tell you what, if I was her parents, I'd beat her ass myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
My daughters are old enough now, so don't call child welfare on me. So now they had no Polly, and they had no suspect. Now, little did the authorities know, but they already had come in contact with Polly's abductor once. But I'll get to that. A $10,000 ransom call was received by the police department soon after for the return of Polly. But once again, the call was traced to an apartment in Petaluma. The investigators burst through the door, and they found a shocked 20-year-old standing there with his mouth hanging open, and he too was a fraud and a little piece of shit.
I'm sorry. All I can picture is, like, the Kool-Aid man busting through their wall.
Well, that might have been how it is. I mean...
Oh, yeah!
And the door frames, and that little safety chain there on the door getting broken off with the door frame, but it's still hooked. But the door frame comes off. So anyway.
Sorry.
This little piece of shit was trying to make money off of someone else's pain.
What is wrong, you know, with
shame
these
on
people?
You. Trying to make money off of grieving parents. You know, these parents are grieving for their daughter, not
right.
knowing what's going on.
They don't know if she's dead or alive.
Exactly.
And then you get these little assholes claiming that she is.
Right.
And we don't know.
So Polly's parents are desperate. But they weren't losing hope. They actually, I don't know if it was the mom or the dad who put in the paper the following. It said, whoever you are, wherever you are, please return Polly to her family. She belongs here. We miss Polly so much. We miss the twinkle in her eye and her sweet humor. We long to see her beautiful smile and hear her musical voice. Our darling, if you can read this, please know that your mommy and daddy love you so much and will continue to search for you until we can hold you safely in our loving arms. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Her mother even burned a candle in the window every night while Polly was missing. So the police didn't know their answer was right there in their own records your entire time. And that's because the night Polly was abducted, the police were called to the property of Dana Jaffe. She lived about 20 miles north of Petaluma. Jaffe had returned home around 11 o'clock at night after work to her daughter and babysitter. The babysitter left shortly after and headed down their private road. Private drive, private road. It was on private property. So when she saw a car stuck in a ditch, she thought it was kind of odd because it's private property.
Right.
A man waved down the car for her to stop, and he put his hands on the hood and demanded that she get out of the car. When she refused, he asked her how far to the next town. and what was up the road. The babysitter could smell his body odor. That's how close he was. Why'd she freaking roll the window down, for one thing? Why'd you stop?
And when you put your hands on there and say,
yeah,
this, reverse and go.
Get the fuck off my car!
Yeah, who do you think you are? See, she could have dealt with it right then and there. Just run his ass over.
So anyway, she smelled his body odor and his bad breath, and frankly was she was probably scared shitless, so she got out of there ASAP. Headed for town and the nearest payphone. So when she got to the payphone, she called Jaffe and told her about the man and told her that she should probably get out of there just to be safe. And she did, with her daughter. She grabbed a baseball bat, which, cool.
I have my baseball bat.
Got her daughter in the car and headed down the private driveway, passing Davis. That's him. And as he stood on the side of the private road, she called 911, and two deputies were dispatched. When they got there, the man was near his car smoking a cigarette, sweating profusely, even though it was a really cold night. Well, really cold night in California, what, 60?
Yeah.
So they asked him why he was there on private property and proceeded to tell them that he was going to meet a relative in Redway Valley. And I don't really know how close that is in proximity, but it's just a story anyway. So he had stopped to look at the view. He got...
Middle of the night.
Yeah. He stopped. He got stuck and was putting some leaves and brush underneath the tires to give it traction to get out of the ditch. But when the police looked under the tires, there was nothing under the tires or around them.
What the fuck is wrong with him?
This asshole. So, that's a huge red flag.
Look, I came out here just for the view.
On a private road.
In the middle of the night.
You fucking idiot. I'm sorry, I got a bad mouth today. This, you know, I'm going to just say it. This pissed me off.
It's pissing me off.
I could see, and wait till you see what he does and shit like that. I wanted to throttle him myself. I'm getting wound up just sitting here. So now, all of this would have been a huge red flag for investigators if they were aware of the abduction of Polly Klass. But since the time, and the time had would have coordinated perfectly, the abduction was heard over the police scanner, but here's the thing, it wasn't heard over the police scanner.
Uh-oh.
Their scanner was on the wrong frequency at the time. Which meant they didn't hear it.
But so even like not knowing that there's a possible child abduction.
Right.
This moron is sitting in the fucking middle of the woods in the middle of the night and he's parked there for the view.
Well, they
we want to see everything in your car, mister.
Wait, well, I'm going to get to that. You're way ahead of me.
Sorry.
So officers could tell the man was intoxicated. However, when he took a sobriety test, he passed it with flying colors. So he must have been a big-time drinker, and he was used to all them tests.
Some people learn the alphabet backwards on purpose.
That's crazy.
I don't.
And his driver's license came back clean. However, it wasn't the truth at the time. When police ran his driver's license, they only found driving violations.
Get stylish, durable flooring for your home that will last a lifetime. And get it installed with help from Lowe's. Get Stainmaster Pet Protect Carpet starting at just $1.99 per square foot. And Pergo Wet Protect Laminate starting at $2.49 per square foot. Both with limited lifetime warranties. Order now, only at Lowe's. Home to any budget, home to any possibility. Install available in-store only and through independent contractors. See Lowe's.com for details and licensing. U.S. only. See Lowe's.com product detail page for more warranty information.
When you game with Alienware, you have the freedom to be anyone, like the galaxy's most feared warrior, and the freedom to go anywhere. Elevate your gameplay with the new Alienware X-Series laptops with 11th Gen Intel Core processors. Defy boundaries and start gaming now at Alienware.com.
Not criminal activity, because back then, it didn't show up that way.
That's bullshit.
I know. So since he didn't even have a driving violation, really, he just had, like, misdemeanor things, they couldn't hold him. So the deputies tried to convince the property owner, which was that Dana, to make a citizen's arrest on him, which I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, you can do that.
which under California law means a citizen can make an arrest for this type of misdemeanor by just saying, I arrest you. I wish we could do that here.
You know it. You can sit it, like, if somebody's being an asshole or, you know, like, the that airplane thing we watched.
Oh, yeah, when they duct taped them?
Yeah. That, they could have just been, you know, this is a citizen's arrest, and duct taped his hands together and called it a day.
I really want to do that.
One day you'll be able to, I'm sure.
So they wanted her to do this, and she refused.
Why don't they just arrest him?
Because she didn't want to make an arrest, and he was on private property.
No, you're lying, sir, and I still want to check your car.
Well, they didn't do it. Oh, well, they did do that part, so... So they had no other choice but to call a tow truck to help him get out of the ditch. But while they were waiting for the tow truck, the police waited, and they searched, asked him if he could, they could search his car again, and they found an open container of beer, which he tried to drink in front of them. But of course, they made him dump it out. But he didn't really seem to give a shit.
He's just a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Yep. So,
right there, the open container they could have got him on.
Well, he wasn't. Here's the thing, Kelly, and I know this from my husband. If you're not sitting behind the steering wheel, you can't prove that you were drinking and driving.
No, but in New York, you still get busted for an open container.
I don't know if they do that there. Maybe, I don't know. Because I know in Louisiana, you got drive-up margarita bars.
Well, I'm just saying that these police seem to not hold very much power and not very useful.
Well, yeah, there's that. So, once the car was out of the ditch and back on the road, they escorted him to the highway, and that's where they went their separate ways. So, you're asking, how does this connect? I'll tell you. Unless you've already figured it out.
I don't know what the fuck's going on. This guy's out in the middle of the night for the view. These cops aren't doing anything for anybody.
Well, here's how it went. 2 months later, Dana Jaffe, the owner of the property, would be calling the police once again. It was on November 28th. She'd found something she thought the police might be interested in. She led the officer to a place where loggers had partially cleared trees on her land. There on the ground was a piece of a silk cloth that kind of looked like a hood. And there were also straps from packing tape and torn leggings or tights, whatever you want to call them. There were a knot with human hair stuck in it as well.
Good job, guys. Good job.
Jaffe had heard about the abduction of Polly Klass and had a horrible feeling that the items were connected to the abduction, and that's why she called the police. So, yeah, the babysitter, probably, she's thinking, came in contact with a killer. Now, investigators had a name because, like I said, they ran his ID through the system that night. So now they had that guy's name. Because they're starting to put things together. He was in this area. Now we're finding this stuff on her private property. So on and so forth. So, like I said, they ran his name through their system. And he sure had it. His name was Richard Allen Davis.
That sounds like an asshole.
The cloth found on Dana's property also looked to match the one found in Polly's bedroom. And now they needed to find Polly, who they feared had already been murdered. They searched the Jaffe property and the surrounding area. There was a heavy rainstorm, which definitely can make it much more difficult to find any kind of evidence.
And we're
or it could have even been washed away.
We're going to say it's 2 months out now.
Right. But that search continued. However, it was deemed unsuccessful. They decided to turn their attention to Richard himself. The police were able to verify his mother did live in Petaluma, and since he also resembled the sketches of the abductor, they tracked him to an Indian ranchera near I want to say Yucca, California, where his sister lived. And when they got there, they discovered he wasn't there, so they set up roadblocks around the area, hoping that if he did show up there, they'd be able to catch him before he bolted. Sure enough, he pulled up in a van. It's always a van.
Oh, was it a windowless white van?
Didn't say, but it's always
It probably was, I bet. I'll put money on that.
So one of the officers asked him for his ID, and it was, sure enough, Richard Allen Davis. So the police immediately swarmed his car, or van, and arrested him for a probation violation that he had had previous from a drunk driving arrest. So he got the drunk driving arrest after they pulled him out of the ditch. And if he had had it prior to that,
they would have known
they that. Would have gotten him. So, where was I?
Why can't these fuckers fuck up quicker?
I know. So they couldn't actually arrest him yet on Polly's abduction because they didn't have that much evidence against him. But then in November of 30th of that very year, the authorities began interrogating Davis for the abduction of Polly, which he vehemently denied. Jillian and Kate were then brought in for a lineup of possible substances, possible suspects, and they, sure enough, they picked him out immediately without any kind of hesitation. And the partial palm print found at the class home was a perfect match against Richard's.
That motherfucker. I bet that lady feels like an asshole now.
Well, she should.
Right.
And so should the neighbors for not saying anything.
Fuckers.
So, on December 4th, Davis told the investigators he, quote-unquote, screwed up big time. And he wanted to show them where Polly's body was. He took them to near Cloverdale, California, off of Highway 101, to her little body, which was pretty badly decomposed due to the amount of time she'd been missing. Her skirt was pulled up a bit, but her underwear and bra were still on. Next to her was a rope and a knotted cloth, thought to be how she died of strangulation. Semen was also found on her body. However, they couldn't confirm a sexual assault had taken place.
And that's enough, finding semen on her body.
However, evidence showed a story David refused to admit. Davis said that the night he planned on visiting his mother, Evelyn, he couldn't find her address because he was drunk. He continued drinking, and he admitted to using street drugs. He continued walking, carrying his duffel bag, and cutting strips of cloth with scissors, before finding a random home and climbing through the open window. The next thing he said he remembered was that he had a girl in the car next to him and she was complaining about her ties being too tight. He went on to say that he got his car stuck, so he got out of the car, brought her up the embankment, and told her to be quiet while he tried to get the car out of the ditch. And that's where he said Polly was the entire time he was talking to police. I'm not buying it.
No, because they escorted him out of there. How would he get her in the car?
He went on to say that when they escorted him to the highway, he waited 15 minutes before turning back and picking her up. I can't imagine that's true at all, because why wouldn't she be making noise? The police are right there.
Oh, I'd be screaming.
Right.
Or run my ass to the house that's up the private driveway.
Yeah. So he then went on to say that he took her to a gas station because she needed to use the restroom, and quickly realized that he couldn't let her go because he didn't want to give himself away and end up back in jail. So allegedly, listen to this part. This is also what pissed me off. He refused to refer to Polly as anything other than a broad. And he refused to say that he assaulted her.
Well, his new name is Fuckface.
Yeah. So what I think was he didn't want to admit that he had assaulted her, mm-hmm. because he knew his ass was going to jail. And he knows that in prison, inmates have their own kind of
justice
for people that hurt children. So,
oh yeah, if he was
honestly, in my opinion, it's exactly what he deserves.
No, you just throw them in Gen Pop and let nature take its course.
Yep. Many people believe that his story wasn't the entire truth, and that when the police assisted him with his car, she'd already been murdered, which that's what we thought.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, though, he was in custody, and they had the confession they needed. So in 1996, Richard Allen Davis was brought to trial, where he again said he didn't sexually assault Polly because of something that she had said about her dad. And this is... And he said that Polly told him, just don't do me like my dad, insinuating that her father had assaulted her previously.
Oh, he's such a fucking asshole.
Can you imagine? That's like pouring salt into the wound.
I would have gotten up. They would have had many bailiffs.
So, this obviously and rightfully so made Mark angry enough to lunge at him, but was quickly restrained and ended up leaving the courtroom to avoid causing further commotion. It's obvious he was attempting to place blame on Mark and take some of the heat off of him. But no one believed that he was telling the truth of his suggesting that he had hurt his daughter.
And listen, if I'm the judge, I would have taken my time calling the bailiffs on him.
Not gonna lie. I would have let him get his swings in.
Yep. Like, oh, what happened?
But they normally jump right on somebody quick.
I know. That's the unfortunate thing.
I asked Frank that. Why do you have to, like, jump on them? Let them get their licks in. But Frank's like, you can't do that.
Well, he was a complete fuckface, and he did awful, awful things. Yep. One sucker punch to the face is not nearly enough.
No, it's not. It's a small price to pay. So he was doing anything and everything to taunt this family with his story of Mark's abuse of his own daughter. He even went so far as to flipping off with double fingers the media in the courtroom. Like, double.
Double deuces. Yep. What a fucker.
Yep. So on June 18th, 1996, after 10 weeks of deliberation, and here's my thing. What the hell is the matter with you people that it took 10 weeks?
No, it would have been 2 seconds, like this fucker's going to the chair.
I guess we're never going to be on a court.
Doubt it.
So, Judge Thomas C. Hastings proceeded to formally sentence Davis to death, saying, Mr. Davis, this is always a traumatic and emotional decision for a judge. However, you've made it very easy today by your conduct.
Boom! Mic drop.
Yep. So, Richard Allen Davis was convicted of kidnapping, murder, and sentenced to death on August 5th, 1996.
I would have been exactly 1 year and 1 day old.
So, we often look into past killers that we've featured on our podcast to maybe gain some insight of what may have occurred earlier in their life that might be a factor in their deviant behavior. But don't get me wrong. Under no circumstances are Kelly and I saying that your past is responsible for your present or your future. I'm just saying sometimes it does factor in, but certainly isn't an excuse. So Davis was born to alcoholic parents who allegedly punished him with tactics most would consider child abuse. For instance, his mother punished him for smoking by burning his hand. By age 11, he was already abusing and harming animals. Red flag. Yeah. And according to the mother of one of Davis's childhood friends, he allegedly doused a...
This is going to make me cry.
Yep. He doused a cat with gasoline and set it on fire. He also carried a knife and cut stray dogs. That is one fucked up kid.
He's worse than Pocket Robin guy that I was telling you about, that small town murder did, and then I wanted to follow up on it. It's like, that mother... Remember, he was cooking with ketchup on a boilerplate in his room,
right,
and his parents let him go out at night doing this.
This kid is worse.
No, he's just hurting things to hurt them. He's not eating them.
So he was a fucked up kid before he was a fucked up adult. So he was well on his way to being the shitty person he is today.
We should douse him in
kerosene. Yeah, that should happen. He should get, you know what? An eye for an eye.
Mm-hmm.
So in the years to follow...
I don't care if I go blind.
In the years to follow, he committed an assortment of crimes, including stealing, forgery, theft of a motorcycle, public intoxication, travel violations, burglary, and that's just to name a few. The judge at the time offered him the opportunity to enlist in the army, or he would be sent to juvenile detention, so he opted to enlist. Wow. The defender of our country.
Yeah.
But that didn't work out well. His military career lasted a short 13 months due to his many infractions, including going AWOL and fighting and the use of morphine. So I'm assuming it was a dishonorable discharge.
I should hope so.
At 21, he was charged with burglary, but ended up serving only a year. 7 weeks after he got out, he kidnapped a woman in a parking lot by knife point, took her to an abandoned area where he tried to get her to perform certain acts. But his plan didn't work out as he had expected. The woman grabbed the knife out of his hand and ran for her life.
I would have stabbed the motherfucker and then ran.
Yeah, you want me to perform? You perform, motherfucker! I'm wound up today.
Sorry, and I'm not helping that.
So anyway, thankfully a police officer driving by at the time stopped to help her and ultimately arrested Davis on the spot. He then tried to take his own life during this jail sentence and was sent to a psychiatric hospital where he escaped and for 5 days committed a series of different crimes until he was finally apprehended. He told the judge he had no remorse for his crimes whatsoever. Wow. No conscience. So in 1983, when Richard was serving 16 years for another crime he had done, officials were in the process of changing laws due to overcrowding in the prisons and were releasing prisoners after they served only half their sentence. And guess what? Richard Allen Davis had already served 8 years of his 16 years, meaning he was eligible for early release. And against his probation officer's advice, he was released. And 3 months later, he abducted Polly. And I'm sure you'll all agree that if the government had dealt with the overcrowded prison system properly, instead of releasing convicts into society with Davis's history, Polly would still be alive.
Yeah, like, get rid of the idiots that got busted for selling pot 3 times. Exactly. Like, they don't need to be in jail.
But no, they're going to let...
fuckers like that.
So Polly's case had led to many positive changes. Even though it was something bad, it did have some positive outcomes for other people. Her father had created the Class Kids Foundation, and this foundation helps parents of abducted and missing children. And it's all because of Polly. Officers can now see all criminal activity when they run someone's driver's license, too. And not only can they see the driving violations, they can see all criminal activity, which we now know would have changed the outcome of this case. Additionally, the three strikes law was created and basically means any defendant convicted of a felony that already has a prior conviction of a felony will be sentenced to prison for twice the term otherwise provided for the crime. And if a defendant is convicted of any felony with 2 or more prior strikes, the law-mandated prison term would be at least 25 years to life. However, there was an addendum made, which I'm sorry I never got to look at, in 2012, so I'm not sure what happened there.
It probably changed, like, the type of felony.
Probably. So he had already been convicted of a massive amount of felony charges, and if this law was already... in play, he would have been tucked away in prison and wouldn't have had the opportunity to kill Polly or anyone else for that matter.
Yeah, because if he killed her, who else did he kill?
Yeah, exactly. You don't know. There could have been other people.
Because he's obviously a fucking liar.
Mm-hmm. So thankfully, this case was solved, but unfortunately, it did not have the outcome everyone was hoping for. Polly's parents went on to do so much to change how missing persons and abduction cases were solved. For instance, Amber Hagerman, she was a 9-year-old that was kidnapped while riding her bike in Texas and brutally murdered. After Amber's death, there was a congressman, Martin Frost, with the help of Mark Klass, drafted the Amber Hagerman Child Protective Law, which is the Amber Alert. And it was enacted during President Clinton's run.
That is such, like, an amazing... Like, I remember I was in Vegas, and we were in the middle of the show, and everybody's cell phones were going off because they had an Amber Alert for a missing child in Vegas.
I think that's great. Another really positive outcome was the police radio system was upgraded, so all police channels are sent through a centralized 911 system, so there's no chance of them being on the wrong channel.
Right.
And although Richard Allen Davis was sentenced to death 25 years ago, he's now 67 and sitting on death row still in San Quentin State Prison. This is a bright thing. He allegedly had been attacked by several prisoners and overdosed. He sadly survived and is currently in solitary confinement, which he's probably all fucked up in his head now.
Let's hope.
So, this is one of the parts that really pissed me off. I think the whole thing put
me off. Yeah, I'm saying this is like a pretty downer of a story.
So, in June 2009, the California Supreme Court upheld Davis's death sentence because he and his lawyer argued that his jailhouse confession was inadmissible in court because it was given without an attorney present. The court ruled it was justified, and his lawyer told reporters he intended to ask for a rehearing. And I'm not sure if that's entirely true, but I heard the reason for it being upheld was because, according to what I heard on the internet, Mark was asked to go meet with Governor Newsom. Mm-hmm. On a Tuesday afternoon, he was told by the illustrious governor, in no uncertain terms, there would be no execution during his administration. Mark said he felt like he had died a little bit when he heard that. I would too.
This motherfucker is sitting up there getting 3 hots and a cot, cable TV, AC.
He must have felt like blindsided. And then the very next day, Newsom signed an order on execution stating that the death penalty is ineffective, irreversible, and immoral. And I can't help but wonder if it's about money, since California spent $5 billion and only executed 13.
Well, that's the thing. And then you're still feeding him. You know what I mean? Like, you're still giving him health care.
It's not about money.
No, and that's, but, you know, but they're making it seem like it is.
So, you know, the death penalty, it's kind of a sensitive topic on both sides. You can debate.
Both
sides have valid points.
And not everybody that commits a crime, like, and I know it doesn't deter people from committing their crimes, but...
But maybe if they used it more, maybe it would.
Well, in this case, why... I don't know. I'm more like it should be eye for an eye. Like, you should get that same punishment.
So the family had their child taken away from them in the most heinous ways possible 28 years ago. It's been 25 since this child's killer was sentenced, and yet he's still breathing.
It's fucked up.
I'm sorry, it kind of ended kind of abruptly there. But can you imagine?
I love this. I hate the ones where they're like, oh, he just like died of a heart attack like 2 weeks into jail.
I know.
I'm glad he got his ass beat.
Stay alive long enough to suffer.
Right, because like I said, he's getting 3 hots and a cot. He might be fucked up because he was fucked up long before death row.
And I'm not, like I said in that, it's not like you're trying to blame your past on your actions now. But sometimes it does have a lot of outcome. Like, it kind of sets the stage for what kind of human you're going to be.
Well, there was a lot of red flags.
But you can't also say, I was abused as a child and that's why I'm a rapist or a murderer or whatever. You know what? Get over yourself. You might have had a shitty childhood, but, you know, you have to strive to try to make yourself a better person.
Right.
You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, be a big boy, and be a successful human being.
Or, hey, parents, maybe have gotten him a therapist when he was lighting kittens on fire.
He's a sick person, huh? And I couldn't believe, I'm going to post him on Facebook and everything, too, when this episode, when we air it. But he's literally on court cam giving the finger, middle finger to the camera.
Don't worry. My next story, there's justice. And it's how they should all go.
That's what has to happen. I know. I shouldn't say this, but sometimes vigilante justice, baby.
Look at Dexter. Dexter was the shit.
He goes a little bit farther than I would go, but...
Hey, he took out only the bad guys.
Yeah, I know, but then he cut them up, so...
Because...
That's too messy.
Yeah, but no, then they forget about them. But he had me. He figured it out. But we did want to congratulate our winner of the book, Wendy. So we will get Wendy her very own copy of Crazy Is As Crazy Does,
Yay,
The Life of
a
Serial
Killer. Looking
forward
to seeing if she, I hope she lets us know how she liked it.
I know. So we'll get that out to her here soon. And then next week we will choose another winner.
I want to win.
Me too. We already won.
Why am I saying I want to win? I already did get a book.
We already have books. It's still fun to win things. All right. Well,
that's it for today, Cal. That was a long one.
It was a long one. What the fuck?
I got wound up in there.
I'm out here for the view.
I apologize for my salty language. That wasn't even salty. That was over salty.
It wasn't salty enough, in my opinion. Until next time. Bye.
Oh, we never did that.
When you game with Alienware, you have the freedom to be anyone. Whether it's a smooth-sounding narrator or the galaxy's most feared warrior. And the freedom to go anywhere in merely an instant. So no matter who you choose to be or where you choose to go, Alienware empowers you to defy boundaries and find freedom. Elevate your gameplay with the new Alienware X-Series laptops with 11th-gen Intel Core processors. Defy boundaries and start gaming now at Alienware.com.